first of all, of course, thank you to all of the panelists for their talks. As separate presentations, they provide grounded, empirical, and theoretical accounts of intersections between work, race, and migration, and in particular, the evolving legal systems, immigration regimes, employment relations, and social landscapes of reception that both racialized immigrants and migrant workers confront when trying to secure decent employment in central Canada. So in my role as discussant, I've had the opportunity to read over some of these papers and think about these presentations in conversation with each other, and to reflect on some of the broader themes and questions that these pieces seem to be pointing us towards. I'd like to share some of these reflections with you. I'll try and keep it brief. I know you probably all have a lot of questions, so I'll just take this as a starting off point to take us into a discussion period, into a conversation period. So one of the major themes that runs through each of the presentations is an account of profound changes that have recently been made to Canadian labor and immigration policies. Changes associated with dramatic transformations in migration flows, legal classifications for entry and residing in Canada, and transnational systems of organizing labor markets. As the panelists show, not only are more and more people entering Canada as temporary residents, but increasingly, a growing number of these individuals are racialized migrant workers recruited from developing countries by low-wage employers to fill positions in occupations defined by the state as low-skilled. So with the proliferation of temporary residents, including temporary foreign workers, international students, and refugees, what this has created are new policy structures and conditions of regulating belonging in work sites, labor markets, and the nation. Indeed, as Faye Faraday suggests, along with scholars like Jonah Hennerby and Carrie Prebisch, temporariness has become a more normative and perhaps even first criteria for becoming a member of the Canadian polity, downloading more insecurity onto migrant subjects while absolving states and employers from responsibilities. These processes are legally defined yet culturally informed. Indeed, as Adrian Smith shows, as well as Faye Faraday, the idea of both worker and people as temporary is an active exclusionary process that is both discursively and legally produced, informed through dominant worldviews that are situated in power relations and which perpetuate vulnerability. Indeed, as they both show, it is in the realm of law that quote-unquote unfree workers are created, and in the cultural realm that these ideas are justified and maintained. This unfree labor has minimal rights to reside in Canada and circulate in the labor market, workers who, as Faraday explains, have tied work permits that make them both highly exploitable and disposable. Beyond the legal and discursive realm, it is in the presentations of Aziz and Sonia that we really see these processes and conditions being played out at the level of the worksite and the labor market. As Aziz shows in his article, quote, agencies understand how to leverage workers' immigrant status to provide cheap labor. Sonia recounts widespread employment violations among many of the racialized workers who turn to or interface with the Workers' Action Center. Moreover, what each of the panelists draw our attention to is that law, including immigration and employment law, is an extremely important institution involved in the social regulation of work sites and labor markets, setting the landscape or context of reception in which newcomer incorporation and exclusion takes place. Yet ironically, while these employer-friendly policies exist to purportedly address labor market needs, they are skewed with regards to how the labor market and societies actually operate. So if we think of the works of Saskia Sassen, as she notes, even though many governments, like the Canadian government, seek to create knowledge-based economies with quote-unquote high-skilled workers, there are still need for low-wage workers to support the running of these societies, including in occupations like janitorial work, childcare, and food services. And yet, in spite of this very obvious reality, they are deemed un or less desirable for full inclusion in Canada, both discursively and legally. And as a consequence, scholars like Lewin Goldring and Patricia Landau note that increasingly, citizenship status has therefore become an ever more important variable that shapes conditions of exclusion, especially since, as Leah Vosko notes, there is a strong positive correlation between temporary work and experiences of precarious employment. Moreover, these new and dramatic changes that are being implemented to labor and immigration policies are beneficial to the interests of capital at the expense of workers. And while many scholars and activists are focusing on the unprecedented nature of many of these policies, so as Faraday, you know, she's talked about, this is really a major dramatic shift in terms of temporary entrance we've never seen in Canada before, there are still sort of long-term historical roots in these processes. As Smith attests, Canada's temporary foreign worker program is Canada's latest civilizing mission of creating subjects of empire. Moreover, Canada's image as a benevolent, peacekeeping state should be outed for what it is, a nationalist trope, one disconnected from historical reality. And instead, Canada should be analytically approached for what it is, an imperialist and apartheid state that promotes and creates racialized structural inequality through what Smith refers to as a project of pacification. Now, moving beyond the devastating conditions that Canadian labor and immigration policies seem to be promoting, all of the panelists also offer hope by proposing strategies for remedying or resisting these downgrading of conditions. Aziz calls for, he didn't really talk about it, but he certainly writes about it in his article. Maybe you can ask him about it. But he writes about a model he refers to as precarious worker organizing, one that seeks to build a more comprehensive strategy and that is attuned to different social dimensions of inclusion and emphasizes leadership, development, and education as central features of organizing. Sonia and the Workers' Action Center also call for what they refer to as movement-building model of change, a method for organizing that, like precarious worker organizing, addresses the challenges of precarious employment and the vital interconnections of race, citizenship, and low-waged work. And in a similar vein, Smith argues that we need to redefine what solidarity looks like, not just based on class terms, as Marxists might suggest, but rather a reconstruction of a new development model, one that is attuned to key dimensions of belonging like race, citizenship status, and conditions of unfreedom. And Fay Faraday also suggests that to move in this direction, the Canadian state should make immediate changes to immigration policies that allow all workers, regardless of skill level, to apply for permanent residency at reasonable odds of attaining such status. Moreover, each of the panelists is articulating a new direction for the Canadian nation, one that is premised on conditions of inclusion and belonging rather than exclusion and displacement. For me, this raised a couple of questions that I think these presentations seem to be pointing us in the direction of, that we can take up or not, depending on the will of the audience. But first of all, what does or should Canadian belonging look like? So we've certainly talked a lot about exclusions, displacements, violations, the racialization of people and bodies and lands, but what are the actual qualities or dimensions that as a nation we should be striving towards? And the second question that would also raise for me was sort of the transnational component of these processes. While we're talking about migrant labor and globalization, the transnational piece for me didn't seem quite as obvious there, like what is happening in the sending context. So for instance, I've done research in the Philippines and I will be doing research in Mexico, and the sending context is very different and the brokering process is very different. And I'm just curious if the panelists want to speak to that at all. Thank you.
Thanks.